Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for July 4th, 2021. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is Wrestling Night in America. Happy Independence Day for those of you in the United States, and depending on how festive my neighbors are tonight, you may just hear some fireworks going off in the background of the show. So we'll see. Still some time for the sun to go down, so we may not run into that, but we'll see. Could be fun. could be a little a soundtrack to tonight's Wrestling Night in America. Well, we've got a lot to talk about tonight. It's similar to last week, where we don't have a specific show pay-per-view to preview, but we do have a couple big TVs coming up, and I want to get to that tonight. Great American Bash, NXT's special TV event, is coming up on Tuesday, and then we have AEW's Road Rager back on the road in Miami on Wednesday. And, of course, we've got Money in the Bank 2 weeks from tonight, and when Money in the Bank airs, of course, don't forget that we will be on the air right after Money in the Bank goes off the air. I'm sure we'll have a ton to talk about, as we'll have two wrestlers, one man, one woman, anointed with the Money in the Bank briefcase, the ability to challenge for a title at any time in the next 365 days. So it's going to shake things up a lot, I think, Money in the Bank will. And I think most people would agree that that's necessary. Tonight, to help me preview these shows, is Tyler Sage, PWTorch.com contributor and semi-frequent guest co-host here on Wrestling Night in America. Tyler, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Hey, it's good to be here. Very excited to talk about everything that you just ran down. And yeah, it's a kind of a catch-all week here on the show, so it's very exciting for me, and it's going to really test our range here, so I'm excited.
Absolutely. Don't forget, if you want to participate in the show and you are listening live, you can call on 515-605-9345. Press 1 to talk. Otherwise, you can just hang on the line and listen. You can also email us anytime at wnialivecast@gmail.com. Questions or comments for us to talk about here on the show. So we always love getting emails throughout the week as well. So we'll go in sort of chronological order here, Tyler, and we'll start with Tuesday's Great American Bash. It's a major show, and NXT, I think, is kind of in need of a major show to pop a good rating, as we've seen them struggle on Tuesday nights away from AEW. And one of the big matches on the show is Kyle O'Reilly versus Adam Cole. And this, you know, not the first match in a series of them, but it is right now just a singles match. And Tyler, to me, watching this unfold since the breakup of the Undisputed Era feels a lot like Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa, where the tag team broke up, it was very personal, and the feud felt like it lasted forever. And we're not at that point yet with O'Reilly and Cole, but it feels like we're on our way to O'Reilly, Cole just going with that match over and over again with NXT. You know, do you see the parallels with Ciampa versus Gargano, or, you know, do you think this might be the last we see of O'Reilly versus Cole for a while?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. You know, looking back, how this has gone and where this is going, it just seems like, yeah, these two guys are going to be intertwined for a long time. And when we're talking about, you know, Ciampa and Gargano, I mean, they were dealing with the belt, the NXT world title as well, for a portion of that too. And we haven't even gotten to that part of the story here between, you know, between O'Reilly and Adam Cole. So, yeah, I think that this match in general, not to jump ahead a ton, but screams like an Adam Cole win to at least set up a rubber match. But, yeah, I think these two guys are going to be tied together for a long time, especially depending what happens with the world title in this show as well. I don't think this will be the last time they wrestle. You know, they might have a trilogy, you know, the middle part of this year and then come back to it later, but I think these two guys are going to be intertwined for a long time.
Are you surprised there's no stipulation attached to this match?
No, I mean, I don't think it needs it per se, especially, you know, I don't know what we'll see here. I mean, Adam Cole, I think as a heel, he can win this match and not need a bunch of, you know, shenanigans like most heels do. He kind of reminds me like, you know, Kenny Omega in AEW, where he's a heel, but he just wins straight up. And I mean, there was a little bit of shenanigans with his win over Jungle Boy, but I see Cole booked the same way, where he can get over as a heel, winning clean. And the rubber match could be something where they set up some sort of stipulation that feels more satisfactory than doing it here in the second match. So, you know, I think you'd have to judge that when you get to the end of this trilogy, if there is one. If Kyle O'Reilly just wins straight up and there's no stipulation, that's the end of it. I would think that would be odd, but we'll see. They can always add something too, if this is going to main event or not. I don't know if world title, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if something got added here on a video package to open the show to get everyone excited to get to the end of the show. That would not shock me, but I think they'll keep it without a stipulation.
Yeah, it's part of WWE's sort of, I don't want to say it's backward philosophy necessarily, but we've seen in recent times where they will take a feud and, you know, we were taught through the booking of the 80s and 90s and things like that, that, you know, you sort of book the standard one-on-one match first. As the feud progresses, you add in stipulations until you get to the ultimate blow-off match. And WWE, as of late, has been throwing the regular one-on-one singles match in, you know, in the middle of the feud, and it's sort of jarring, and I don't really know, you know, what philosophically WWE is going for when they do that, if they even have an overarching philosophy when they do that, or it's just kind of on the seat of their pants. But it is kind of strange, and it's something to kind of monitor throughout NXT and WWE as they do that sort of thing. We have the tag team titles on the line as MSK takes on Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher. I'm really looking forward to this one. I'm a big fan of MSK. Their momentum seems to have stalled a little bit, even as champions. When they first entered NXT, I thought they were really hot. You know, they came in, they wrestled a different, more energetic, more acrobatic style, and they seemed like the hot new thing. And then I think there was an injury that took them off TV for a few weeks, and even that seemed to stall their momentum a little bit. And here they get Ciampa and Thatcher, which is somewhat of a styles clash here, with Ciampa and Thatcher being so hard-nosed and rugged compared to the athleticism you see with MSK. But this mutual admiration society we have going on with Ciampa and Thatcher is actually one of my favorite parts of NXT. You know, these two guys who just like to beat people up, and they feuded, and then they came to sort of this respect, this understanding between the two, and now here they are challenging for the title. So I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I agree as well. And this is, you know, looking at the card, to me, this is the most, I don't know, most wrestling matches, not the best way to think, but it's the only one that doesn't have a ton of, you know, meta storylines behind it, or, you know, the result will be what tells the better story down the line. I think either way that this one can go, with MSK retaining or Ciampa and Thatcher getting the belt, I think both stories are good. So this whole match is not clouded by, you know, the thing we talked about just now with O'Reilly and Cole, or we're going to talk about with the title. This just feels like a match I can watch, and it's going to go either way. And I think either way it goes, I'm happy with how it goes, and I know I'm going to get a good match. So not that every match needs to be like that. It's just nice that NXT can deliver that on a fairly big title with the tag team titles, and you can go from there. But, you know, this is interesting too. I mean, MSK, you know, are faces, but I think like a lot of people, they've come across as a bit heelish in their tendencies, and obviously Ciampa and Thatcher are going to be as baby faces they go. So I'm kind of curious to see what happens there with the MSK characters, if they retain or if they don't, what happens at the end there. But, you know, this one is, I mean, there's a lot of very good pick'em matches where I don't think I know exactly what's going to happen on the show, but this one is up there for me on, I think it could go either way. So, you know, for me as a guy, you know, as yourself included, watches a lot of wrestling, that's always a nice thing to see coming up. So I'm very excited for this match as well.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of a potential MSK heel turn in this match at some point. And I know that would be hard to do because, again, MSK's style is not really necessarily a heel style, although we're seeing with the Young Bucks in AEW that you can certainly be heels while still keeping that that athleticism as part of your repertoire. So, and you said, you know, Ciampa and Thatcher, they're going to have their cheering section. MSK has had some issues with getting the crowd behind them. It's not really noticeable to me watching this show, but I've read people on Twitter who've been in the crowd for NXT tapings who said that, you know, MSK has gotten some heel heat in some circles. And I don't really get that. But, you know, if you take that and you think about Ciampa and Thatcher perhaps stealing some of their babyface thunder here, it wouldn't surprise me to see that heel turn maybe happen here in this match.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm kind of like you too. I, that's why I wanted to be very cautious with that prediction, if you will. But, yeah, I think it might be a good opportunity to, if they are going to eventually do that, you might as well do it early as opposed to, yeah, like, I mean, you laid it out earlier, too. They just kind of have lost momentum. You know, the Stand and Deliver takeover match that they had was fantastic and has extended them, I think, as a group. But it's better, in my opinion, to turn them if you're going to turn them anyway. Do it now instead of 6 months from now when they've kind of lost their meaning as the tag team where they are now. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what happens.
One of the other matches slated for Great American Bash on Tuesday, L.A. Knight versus Cameron Grimes. L.A. Knight's recently $1 million championship is on the line. If Grimes wins, he becomes a $1 million champion. If he loses, Grimes becomes L.A. Knight's butler. It's hard for me to imagine, even in NXT, which presents its product a little more sports-like than WWE, Raw, or SmackDown, it's hard to imagine even NXT passing up the opportunity, Tyler, to book Cameron Grimes as a butler for at least a few weeks. You know, it's really difficult, and then you can sort of extend that payoff of Grimes becoming $1 million champion, which you know is going to happen down the line at some point now that he's turned babyface officially. But I just can't picture NXT creative not salivating at the possibility of writing vignettes and segments of Cameron Grimes as LA Knight's butler. So this is one of those that I think we can safely put in the LA Knight category. what's been your thought about incorporating the $1 million championship into this? You know, I'm a big Ted DiBiase fan. I think this is given, you know, even if you don't take the $1 million championship seriously, and there's really no reason to, it's not a sanctioned title, but it's given an added bonus, an added aura to what would be a very low-card, non-important LA Knight versus Cameron Grimes feud.
Yeah, I agree. I think obviously I'm with you on the result as well, and that's a smart way to go. But, yeah, I mean, this is a kind of a perfect case scenario all the way around. You know, the synergy around this is surprisingly good. When DiBiase came back, obviously that, you know, who knows if that was going to be a one-week thing or if they were going to do a longer story with him. And, you know, I think he's done his part well. Bringing this title back means something to a portion of the audience. And I think there's enough younger viewers that have an appreciation for that title as well and that story. So, yeah, I agree with 100%. I think it makes this feel a lot more important than it is. If this belt was not on the line and the stipulation was not there, this would definitely not make this show. And there's only five matches on the show, and this made it. So it has elevated these guys to a level that, you know, I personally enjoy both their characters. And to me, they're the most, you know, like you said, they're the most 80s type wrestlers there are. And they're telling an 80s, early 90s type story, which is good. I mean, it's good variety on the show. And I think that it's smart to do that every so often. And it's elevated both these guys. And it's, you know, again, to compare NXT to AEW is what we're all going to do forever. But the $1 million title is being used a lot better than the FTW title is within the Team Taz group. So, I think it's been as good as you can hope for. You know, when this idea was first pitched, I think they really knocked it out of the park.
And the thing about it, too, is LA Knight is a sort of over-the-top heel character that you don't really see – you don't take seriously enough for him to be this main event player. And Cameron Grimes, in the character that he currently has, is an over-the-top babyface, which you don't really see as someone you could take seriously as a main eventer, but when you put them together, they work perfectly with each other because they're both so such over-the-top characters, and there is a place on the card and on the roster, even in NXT, for those types of characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, in this episode of NXT last week, their segment with each other after the Cameron Grimes match, I was my favorite, you know, 2 minutes on the show. And, you know, not that you want this every time, but I mean, LA Knight was laughing, at, you know, laughing along with everybody else at home when Grimes did his to the moon thing. And it was just like, man, these guys are having a great time as people. And it's translating for me. And, you know, I'm sure that's not a popular opinion with everybody. But, yeah, this has been some of the, you know, just lighthearted fun that I think has kind of been missing on NXT, you know, as they've been very sports-like and everything. But it's just good to spice it up. So, yeah, this has been great.
Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell defend their women's tag team titles against Io Shirai and Zoe Stark. You know, Candice and Indy have not been tag champs for a long time yet, although Shirai and Stark, you know, when you've got Io Shirai involved, I think you have to take it seriously as a possibility that she's going to win the title. How do you think they've balanced with Candice and Indy the Dexter Lumis stuff, which really goes in sort of one direction in terms of shtick and, you know, hard to take seriously sometimes? How do they balance that with actually presenting Candice and Indy as serious tag champions?
Yeah, I would say, you know, not as successful as the last segment that we talked about there. But, yeah, you know, I just don't like in general when any, you know, team or individual performer can be kind of boiled down to, oh, they have one has a crush on the other. You know, so it's just like a very vapid and kind of silly storyline that controls the whole team. And, you know, I think if you wanted to put LeRae and Hartwell as a, you know, dominant tag team, you don't want to have the whole underlying thing. You know, my first question when you were talking is like, oh, I was looking through to see if there's any word that Poppy's going to be singing live on this show. And then that's going to get in Hartwell's head. You know, that's just like, that's fine for a, like we just said, an LA Knight, Cameron Grimes thing for a title that doesn't really mean anything. This is a newly formed championship within NXT for their women's division that they, you know, I think rightfully so, Triple H and others on media calls have said that's the most, you know, stacked women's division in the industry. And to have this kind of be your showcase and you're worried about a kind of goofy character showing up and kind of throwing it all off is just not not the ideal way to build up, you know, great champions and great storylines. So I think it'd be better if they would have, you know, had a story not with Dexter and in this story. And, you know, yeah, I think this would be a good match, but I don't like that's in the back of my head is Poppy or Dexter Lumis going to show up and cause some shenanigans and be the reason this match goes a certain way. You know, that happens a lot on SmackDown and Raw and has been coming more and more on NXT. And I think that's the one thing they need to obviously diverge away from, but we shall see.
And then in the presumed main event, or if not the NXT title match, Killer Cross versus, Karrion Kross versus Johnny Gargano for the NXT title. You know, Kross is interesting to me because this is it's so extreme with him. You know, one day the conversation is about, oh, you know, his act is a main roster act, and he could be called up at any time. And then there's the other part of you that thinks when you watch him on TV, man, this act is not working as a champion. They could just, you know, decide to. And I mean, there was talk at the last takeover of that multi-person match that he was involved in that, you know, they could take the title off of him earlier than maybe anticipated because it just, you know, it just wasn't working. You didn't buy him as champion. It felt like an act. It didn't feel authentic. So it's hard in my mind to reconcile these two because they are very on extreme ends of the poles here. But I think they're also both true, you know. So if he loses the title here to Johnny Gargano, which I don't necessarily see him losing, the conversation could be either, oh, that means he's going up to the main roster, or he was doing so poorly, NXT decided to take the title off him earlier than maybe people thought they would. And there's such a wide range of opinions on him and his style and you know, just everything about him. Where do you fall on Karrion Kross?
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I fall a little bit more on the negative side for the opinion of him. And, you know, I think he's got a great entrance. For the NXT roster, he obviously is much larger than most of the upper tier talent there. So that helps. But yeah, just he works for me as a big guy who you beat on the way to, you know, going for the world title within NXT. You know, he's a perfect gatekeeper for, you know, if Tommaso Ciampa wants to, you know, avenge his loss especially. But, you know, if he were to break away from Thatcher and go for Goldie, which, you know, is a story that is obviously just sitting there waiting, he's the guy that you would have, you know, you'd have him be Karrion Kross at a takeover to then set him up for the next match. And, you know, I think that's a good use for him. Obviously, you know, I alluded to it with the MSK and the Thatcher Ciampa match, that this match has a lot of meta stuff going into it that you laid out, obviously. And, you know, if he does lose, he almost has to go up to the main roster to save face, to make it look like that's the reason why. And, you know, I don't know, you know, Vince has reportedly been down in the PC and maybe he likes his look, and that's, you know, everyone happy doing that. But, you know, if he loses and then goes into a program with, you know, I don't know, I'm trying to think, anyone, Cameron Grimes, if he were to win or something like that, then yeah, that's an admission of, they pulled the trigger too early on this guy, or he's just not exactly what they thought. And, you know, I don't think you want to do that when you've invested this much screen time and into this character. So another thing to think about is, too, you know, I don't think Johnny Gargano's ever had a bad match in a spot like this. So if this match is not, you know, on the 3.5, 4-star level, I think that's an even more of an indictment on Kross within the NXT landscape. If he can't, you know, have an excellent match, you know, he should have. Whoever's having a match with Johnny Gargano for a title should have the best match on the card, no matter what is going on around it. So even more than him winning or losing, I think him having a really good match with Gargano is the key that I'm looking for. And, you know, I kind of hope for Kross's sake that he does go to the main roster, kind of get a little bit of a rejuvenation, and hopefully Vince can do something with him on that level. But, yeah, I don't know. To answer your initial question, you know, I don't think it's working, and I think the product is suffering at the top a bit because of that. So I would take it off. I don't know if I would put it on Johnny at this point, but we'll see. It's definitely interesting, more so than any other champion we've had in a long time. And I think NXT doesn't really get the credit, but if you look at the long line of champions, there's very few that don't feel like absolutely perfect at the time. And I mean, it's just been the lineage of NXT champions for the last, you know, 5 years has been something that is hard to beat. You'd have to go to New Japan or something like that to get something closer to it. So, yeah, I think this is a pivotal moment for that title.
Well, to mark it down, 8:22 p.m. Eastern is the first time I hear fireworks outside my window here as we're recording.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Keep an eye on that. The sun's starting to go down, so I'm sure we'll hear more of it as it gets darker out. But
yep.
I do want to ask you one more thing about Johnny Gargano. And, you know, he kind of sneaks up on you here in this role.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, oh, wait, Johnny Gargano's in the NXT title match? Because he was pushed so hard. You know, we talked earlier about his feud with Tommaso Ciampa and, you know, the number of matches they had at the top of the card on takeovers and things like that. And then he sort of went away. He's doing this The Way stuff, which is sort of a, you know, upper mid-card type deal. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's back in the NXT title picture again with a completely different character than we saw the first time around. So, I mean, do you believe Johnny Gargano as a potential NXT title contender? Do you think they've done enough to, you know, make him as leader of The Way, an NXT, a realistic NXT title holder here, taking it off of Karrion Kross, who, you know, if this is Johnny Gargano against maybe, you know, Adam Cole for the title, you could say, okay. But with the way Kross has been built up, is Gargano a guy who fans are going to buy into as taking the title off of him?
Yeah, I mean, I look at this in two ways, and it depends how you want to look at it to frame your answer. So I think if you look at, you know, Johnny Gargano from the last year, the last 18 months, last 2 years even, I would say no, he's not that character that I could see dethroning Kross at this time. But if you look at the Johnny Gargano character as, you know, one of the best workers of a generation and an NXT lifer, as far as we can tell. And he's essentially the you can name anybody you want. He's the Bret Hart. He's the Shawn Michaels. He's the whatever worker you want to put on him within NXT that, you know, the fan base has been watching a long time. Can easily see Johnny Gargano beat anybody at any time, especially at a takeover or special event like this on TV. So the character recently, no, but the lineage, the aura, the draw that is Johnny Gargano within NXT, I think can. If he does beat him, which I would still, you know, guess that he will not win. I think Cross will retain and they'll figure it out by the next takeover, what's going on with that title. But I think if Gargano does win, it'll be he'll be a transitional champion. And, you know, they'll try and figure it out with, you know, I think the Cole O'Reilly winner would be a good, you know, opponent there. You know, I assume they have all this mapped out, but yeah. So if that, you know, answers your question, I don't think there's any character that's been built up on NXT in the last 6 months that should really have any chance to beat Karrion Kross, but, you know, that's a problem all in itself. So we'll see.
All right, we're getting to the bottom of the hour here. Greg Parks and Tyler Sage with you talking NXT Great American Bash, running down the card here. If you want to join in, 515-605-9345 is the number to call, wnialivecast@gmail.com is where you can send emails. I have it open throughout the show, so if you're on and maybe a little shy and don't want to talk, then you can feel free to send us an email. We'll read it on air. We'll go to the phones, though, first. It's the 410 area code. This is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America here on July 4th. Hello, Reverend
Hi,
Keith.
Hi, Greg.
How
are you? How are you, Greg?
Hello, there he is.
Greg,
how are you doing? I'm doing well. Thanks. Thanks for calling in tonight.
It's always a pleasure, Greg. And how are you, Tyler?
I'm good. I'll actually be in Baltimore next Sunday, Keith. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Yes, and I'll be right there with you. I've never been to
cool.
Ring of Honor show, and I'm excited. And who knows? We might be able to meet up. I'm looking forward to it, and that's what I wanted to talk about. First, I know you guys have done a thorough preview of the NXT Great American Bash, but I just wanted to say, since I have an opportunity to speak with you, Tyler, what are your thoughts on the Bandido Rush main event? I think this is an impeccable main event. I think it will tear the house down. I'm expecting Rush to retain. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah. First of all, I agree 100% that I think it's probably the best main event that ROH could put on right now from a level of hype with the two characters and just the style that is going to be there. So, yeah, I don't think you can do a better main event for your first live crowd back. You know, me personally, I would love to see Bandido go over, as people have listened to on our show, or if not. I think the Rush championship run has kind of run its course, and that character has run its course as champion a little bit, like the discussion we had about Karrion Kross. I think him and Rush are very similar in their pros and cons as champions. I do agree with you, though. I think Rush will win and retain, but I think Bandido will win it down the line, and they'll set that up, would be the smart booking. But you also cannot, you know, if we look back to WrestleMania, they wanted to have, you know, the fans leave happy. And if Rush wins, I don't think the fans are going to leave happy. So there's always the potential of ROH wanting to make everyone happy that they're live in the crowd and have Bandido go over. So we'll see. I'm going to lean towards Rush, but it is going to be great. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, neither can I. And I'm a huge Bandido fan. So whichever way they go next Sunday at UMBC, I can accept it. Like you said, Rush's title reign has been a little underwhelming. And a lot of it had to do with the pandemic and the lack of the major shows. But at the same token, Bandido, he is fabulous. I mean, he's a high flyer. He can wrestle on the mat. The fans are into him. And just his overall look is captivating. So either way they go next Sunday, I'm pleased. I like the card at large. I think that they've done an excellent job, you know, putting this card together for the pay-per-view, being that it's the first pay-per-view that they've had in a year and a half. And I think it'll be well attended. And I'm looking forward to just being there, being among the fans, being able to see live wrestling, you know, and it's going to be a delight, you know, and I know you and Ryan have been talking about it on Podcast of Honor, and I'm sure you guys are excited to be in attendance as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll be the first live wrestling I'll have seen since the pandemic started, so that's a personal excitement for me. But, yeah, just to see Ring of Honor, you know, back in front of crowds, I do think the promotion has really improved. And, you know, hopefully more people will see it because there's a crowd now, and we'll see videos and GIFs of it, and the energy will be there. It definitely feels like where Ring of Honor was in 2016, you know, 2017, where it's kind of reemerging as a pretty cool, you know, mid-major brand. So I think they've done great work. And yeah, hopefully it'll be a spotlight for the company and for all the fans there.
Okay, you're going back to those DuVern Arena days, Tyler.
Yeah,
I remember that very well. You know, right there in Canton, I was there at every last one of them. And, you know, it's good. They've come a long way from DuVern to William J. Myers. And now over at the newly renamed Chesapeake Equitable Bank Arena, which used to be the UMBC Event Center. So it's going to be a delight. Shifting gears, guys, going over to NXT, I just want to say I like what you guys discussed about Johnny Gargano and Karrion Kross. I could see them pulling what we would call an upset and letting Johnny get that belt just as a transition, you know, being a transitional champion. But more than likely they'll let Cross retain and have him go up against Adam Cole, because I think that would be a money match down the road, Adam Cole versus Cross.
Yeah, I mean, that's – I mean, you'd have to present Cole as a babyface, I think. I think Cross was initially a babyface, but the way he's treated Regal lately, and – you know, I think more so than Adam Cole, you look at a Samoa Joe. It seems like with Joe on the scene, even though part of his deal as being hired by William Regal as sort of the heavy was that he would not wrestle. And I think that's I think that's going to go out the window pretty quickly. You know, I think Joe versus Cross, now that we've seen them face up against each other, is something that a lot of the fans are looking forward to. I think Cole would have to turn babyface to do Cole versus Cross, and you know, Cole has been just so effective as a heel. I don't think you want to turn him back babyface here to do Cross. So Tyler, you know, I'm looking more toward Cross versus Samoa Joe at some point. And we know NXT is a little different cat than main roster, so whereas main roster probably would be doing Joe versus Cross on Tuesday, you know, already, NXT's, they have a better chance of holding it off for maximum impact. But even then, I don't see them stretching out Samoa Joe's role as enforcer, you know, 6 months down the line. I see it happening sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, it's all about the meta question of, you know, how long is Cross on the NXT roster? Is he going to be there for a year? Is he going to be there, you know, is he going to be on is he going to be on SmackDown this Friday after this episode of NXT? So I think that all that is tied to everything. Because, yeah, if you have Cross for a longer period of time, I think you do wait and extend and get to that Samoa Joe match. If you don't have him for long and you can do it, you do it. You know, I think there's more money for me personally to see a Samoa Joe versus Adam Cole match, you know, as to bring it all the way around to the ROH, you know, two former ROH champions in NXT. I think that would be the money match for me, is Cole being a heel and, you know, Joe being the one to try and dethrone him. And, yeah, I think there's money there more than the Cross situation. But, again, as I stated earlier, I'm not enthralled with this Cross character as much as I am with, you know, other characters on the show.
The other thing to mention in terms of Karrion Kross and main roster potential, we do have a draft coming up, scheduled for the end of August, early September, and that dovetails very nicely with SummerSlam in August and potentially a SummerSlam takeover event. So if you do, you know, if you have Karrion Kross holding the title, maybe beats Johnny Gargano here, maybe you do Cross versus Joe. I don't know if you want to put the title on Joe. It could be just a grudge match. But if you do Cross versus Joe at the SummerSlam takeover, boom, Cross moves to the main roster in the draft. Otherwise, you know, and you don't have to have him debut in the draft. You could have him walk out on Monday Night Raw tomorrow night. There's nothing stopping that from happening. But if you do want to use the draft as a way to introduce and mix in some NXT talent with the main roster, if you have Cross lose to Gargano on Tuesday, all of a sudden he's sitting on the sidelines for a month and a half until the draft, and I'm not sure if that's a position you want to have him in. So I'd look for him to retain and maybe SummerSlam takeover. We're talking about him losing the title and moving up to the main roster at that point.
I think that seems like pretty plausible booking to me. And, even though I don't love the Cross character, making Gargano a transitional champion to defend it at the SummerSlam takeover is not the best use of him or that belt or that spot. So, I would check mark that a yes on, in the committee meeting for booking. I think that's a good one.
All right, I'll mark it down then. Tyler's good with that. back to you, Reverend Keith.
Yes. I wanted to say also, moving on to AEW, because I'm skipping around, I'm trying to cover all the promotions on this call tonight. Moving on to AEW, I think that they've done a wonderful job of showcasing their young talent, and I wish WWE would follow suit. Jungle Boy is definitely on a roll. Who would have thought a year ago that he would be the first competitor to reach the 50-win mark? Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, I mean, Jungle Boy is a great example of – you have to be very careful. He's like a little bird that you're holding in your hands, right, Jungle Boy? You've got to be very careful because there's a very specific way to book him and get him over with the crowd. You know, you can't have – the temptation is going to be there when you want to push your next monster to go out there and throw him to the wolves because he's small and he can be thrown around, he can bump. And that's always been WWE's problem when they have – wrestlers the size of Jungle Boy who have that star potential is the WWE doesn't know how to handle the size aspect of it. And AEW has done a very nice job of, you know, Reverend Keith mentioned first to 50 wins in AEW, but also, you know, presenting him as a star and not using the size as an excuse to hold him back or as a disadvantage, Tyler.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I also think it's AEW really trying really hard to market their stars in a unique way. So, for example, I don't think anyone's ever really cared who has the first 50 wins in a promotion. When a promotion starts, you know, I don't know who did that in Impact. I don't know who did that within ROH, for example, anyone else to add. But, you know, AEW realized that, and they put that behind Jungle Boy and made it a big deal. Because that is something unique and special about him to get him over to the audience, and you know, something within WWE, it's definitely more corporate and it has a structure and there's like a cookie cutter method to get people over, and they would just never do that. So I think it shows the potential to just think outside the box a little bit when you're trying to get different people over for different reasons, and that was a good way along with other things. But yeah, and they're a young company. And, you know, if we're talking 15, 20 years from now, I don't know if AEW is as creative and innovative with getting people over as a young, hungry upstart company is. But hopefully they are. And, hopefully all things are cyclical. And hopefully WWE will swing back the other way here as the competition continues to heat up and it makes both companies better is what I'm hoping for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Back to you, Reverend Keith. Do you have anything else for us tonight?
Yes, and I wanted to follow up by saying that Darby Allin is a star. Sammy Guevara is a star. We all know MJF is a stud. And all four of these guys are going to take AEW to the next level. I'm glad that they delayed the Ethan Page match with Darby, because I didn't think there was a need for two gimmick matches on the same show. So they pushed that back a week, which made sense. You know, the coffin match doesn't need to be on the same show with the strap match between Cody and QT. And also later in the month, you have Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, taking on Nyla Rose. I think that'll be a show stealer right there. Because, Nyla Rose is no slouch. So we have some good matches headlining these Wednesday nights. So I expect some good ratings numbers, and I expect AEW to win over more fans now that they're back on the road. Thank you so much for taking my call. Tyler and I know we're going to have a good time next Sunday at UMBC. And
yep.
You guys have a good weekend. Happy 4th of July.
Absolutely. Thank you, Reverend Keith. Happy 4th of July to you as well. I do want to talk a little bit more about that ROH card, Tyler, a little later on the show. Mm-hmm. But since we left off with AEW, let's talk about Road Rager in Miami this Wednesday night. The card as it stands, Young Bucks versus Eddie Kingston and Penta for the AEW tag titles. Andrade makes his AEW in-ring debut against Matt Sydal. Cody Rhodes versus QT Marshall in a strap match. Santana Ortiz and Jake Hager against Wardlow and FTR. Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander against Blade and the Bunny. And MJF has a face-to-face with Chris Jericho. I'll start with the Young Bucks and the tag titles. How have, in your mind, the Young Bucks transitioned from babyface to heel? They're sort of riding that obnoxious line. Have they crossed it, that line to being turn off the TV obnoxious, or are they riding it and being entertaining obnoxious?
Yeah, for me, I think they're riding the line as well as you can, because you know, I think they're doing enough things that are funny. For example, this last week on TV, I think all the facial hair stuff was entertaining and goofy enough that, you know, you can, like, you're laughing at them, not with them, you know, which is the whole point, right? And when they do their heel, and they, you know, the thing with Cutler where he was spraying Matt on accident, like, they're getting comeuppance in their matches, and they lost this match. So they've been booking themselves, you know, they're eating their, you know, I'm trying to think of the, well, anyway, they are getting results for their actions as well. So as a fan, if you don't like them to begin with, they've given you every reason to agree with that. And then when you're watching week in and week out, you know that they are going to pay for their heelishness. So I think they're riding that line really well. And, you know, they're just committed more than they were before. And that's been said everywhere. And I agree with that. But yeah, I think they are, you know, there's no one's ever perfect, but I think they're riding that heel heat as well as you can. And I think that helps being the AEW audience as well, because that crowd wants to, you know, support heel characters, and the way you support a heel character that you really enjoy is to boo them, so they keep getting mm-hmm. over as heels. And I think that the crowd being pretty smart in general helps to facilitate that, as opposed to, you know, even 5 years ago, where, let's say, you have someone like a Kevin Owens who, you know, is power slamming Sami Zayn on the apron, and he's getting tears because he's the coolest thing that people have seen on WWE TV in a long time. And he got cheered for that, which is not what you want. And so I think fans today would have booed that character to keep him in that position. So I kind of view them as a evolution for fans more than anything.
Andrade versus Matt Sydal. If you're Andrade and you're feeling any sort of pressure to make your first AEW match stand out, you should be on your knees thanking the Lord that Matt Sydal is your opponent. I know I would be. I would love for Matt Sydal to be my opponent when I'm debuting somewhere, especially if I'm, you know, feeling the pressure of needing to perform at an extremely high level. This is, I think it's a good draw to have on this show, Andrade's mm-hmm. AEW debut. How hurt has he been already, if at all, with the association with Vicky Guerrero? And I know it's been sort of on and off. He had a really good sit-down interview with Jim Ross a couple weeks ago. But I know that a lot of people did not like, I didn't like his introduction being a part mm-hmm. of Vicky Guerrero's, I don't know if you want to call it a stable or whatever the case may be, that she's got now that she's got Andrade and Nyla Rose. Or are we overstating the effect that Vicky Guerrero could have on Andrade's presentation in AEW?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if we're talking today, it's, you know, July 4th, 2021. And, you know, I think it has not benefited him in any way to have her associated with him. And there's really no potential for him to, you know, turn on her because she's so, you know, nobody could turn on her and be the heel at the end of it, because she's just, you know, the most quintessential heel manager that you can ever have in wrestling, and no one turning on her is going to be anything but a babyface, which you can utilize down the road. If you want to, you know, turn Nyla as a super babyface, you can use that. But, you know, I think the example that comes to mind clearly within AEW is Miro. And his association with Kip Sabian was so bad and so maligned and really hurt his character with me and with a large portion of the audience. And, you know, as soon as they dropped his association with Kip and let him, you know, do this new character, you know, I would have done it differently personally. I would have had him come in pretty hot as opposed to where he is now. But the Miro character is something that is, you know, one of the best things in the company right now. And that was able to basically flip the switch overnight. And if the stuff with Andrade and Vicky is not good, I have faith that they'll be able to pivot like they've done with so many other storylines that haven't been working. But we'll see. I'm curious to see if he comes out with her or what his presentation is within a match. Mm-hmm. Is she ringside? Is she So I think to be determined on his placement there, but I don't think having her associated with him any more than she already is going to benefit anybody in that situation.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example. The Miro thing with Kip Sabian is a lot of people kind of groaned and thought it was a wasted opportunity to present Miro basically the way he's being presented now. But I also think it shows that they can pivot, and they may not get it right off the bat, but that doesn't totally disqualify a wrestler from being a major player in 2, 3, 4 months, like with what happened to Miro. So, you know, we're all getting our fainting couches ready for, you know, Andrade and Vicky Guerrero and being just so aghast at that pairing. But if you look at Miro, I mean, that's not going to hold Andrade back, right? That's not going to be the thing that dooms his AEW run for eternity. So there is a chance that it can be turned around. Cody versus QT Marshall in the strap match here. This is sort of the culmination of the Nightmare Family versus the Factory feud. And I know QT Marshall doesn't scream pay-per-view kind of guy, but are you still surprised that what appears to be the blow-off, or at least a major stipulation match between the two leaders of these groups, is happening on TV and not on pay-per-view?
I'm not, because, you know, this is the first AEW show outside of Jacksonville with live fans. So I think within the company, and especially to someone like Cody, this is as big, if not bigger, than a pay-per-view. And he wants to, you know, have a big match where he's spotlighted in there, if I can be frank. I think that's the motivation behind this match. And, you know, I also I hope for your optimism that this is the end of this feud. I'm a little concerned that it being a strap match, there's going to be a big, you know, there's going to be 10 people out at some point, and we're going to get a multi-man tag match or I just don't, until it's officially over and Cody is feuding with someone else, I'm always going to be dubious that this is not over, which I think it would be great for him and his character if it was, but we'll see. So as you can tell, I'm not entirely excited for this match and this storyline to continue. So
we'll take the MJF face-to-face with Jericho, as well as the six-man tag Santana, Ortiz, Hager against Wardlow and FTR together. Has AEW done a good job, in your opinion, of shuffling the deck in this feud to keep it going between these two groups? Because a lot of people looked at some of the major matches, Stadium Stampede, the War Games, the Blood and Guts cage match, and you're like, how do you keep this feud going? And one of the refrains we heard from people who thought it was possible was these groups are big enough where you can do different incarnations of matches and feuds amongst each other before you come back again 2, 3, 4 months down the line and have maybe the blow-off, whatever match that, I don't know how you blow it off when you've done Blood and Guts and Stadium Stampede, but whatever ultimately ends this feud, you can get them all back together. There's enough wrestlers and enough intriguing personalities to get them to pair off against each other at different times. So do you think AEW's done a good job of keeping this feud alive by having, like, you know, recently it was MJF versus Sammy Guevara, this week it's the six-man. Have they done a good enough job to prop up interest in this feud by having the different members pair off against each other in matches?
Yeah, I think they have. And I, you know, if anyone has listened to me on the subject, I was on the opposite side of that when posed that question, especially going into Stadium Stampede and after Stadium Stampede when they, you know, showed that they were going to continue this feud even beyond that. And, you know, like we talked about with WWE singles matches kind of being built backwards, you know, having kind of the stipulation first and then the regular match in the middle. That's how this has been too. And I'm not a fan of that booking style generally, but you know, with this, you got to look at everything on a case by case basis. And you know, Blood and Guts was great. Stadium Stampede was more fun than a wrestling match really. But everything they've been inventive, and the MMA match was not perfect, but it was a good attempt in my opinion, and something unique that you know, intrigued me as a viewer. And the you know, obviously the MJF Sammy Guevara match was pretty incredible for a TV match. And you know, I think the heat is good between FTR and Santana Ortiz, and with the Conan and Tully promo, they've just been doing a lot, and most of it has been good. So when something's good and it continues to be good, and I'm looking forward to matches that I've seen a couple of times already, I think that is proof enough that the feud is good and can continue because all these guys are delivering. And, you know, even Jake Hager is motivated, which is telling you something about how much these guys like to work with each other. So, so typically if you just give me that, the scenario in a vacuum, I'm going to say, you know, 100 times out of 100 that I don't like that. And I don't think it's going to be very good, but I've been wrong on this one. And I am, you know, the day that I'm not excited to see MJF and Jericho have a segment together or see these gentlemen interact in the ring is the day that, you know, I'm over it. But I think we still have I think they have weeks and months to continue this, and I'll still be on board. So that's something that all these men have done.
Mm-hmm. Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander against Blade and the Bunny. Orange Cassidy is tough because he's a guy fans like, and we've seen him in major matches against guys the level of Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega, but it does kind of feel like with his character, if he's not visiting the main event scene, he's got to be pretty far down the card. I mean, it's hard, I think, to balance it with his character. It's hard to balance that, I think. Do you think AEW has done a nice job, or do you think he, by virtue of what he showed against Jericho and Omega and his rabid fan base, do you think he deserves a higher permanent spot on the card, or do you think he's a guy with his character that should just kind of visit the main events every once in a while, and when he's not there, you know, kind of shutter down the card and do some comedy bits?
Yeah, probably more towards the latter of the options there, even though I'm a big Orange Cassidy fan. He's like literally just a nightmare to book around the rest of your roster. He's great in the ring, but, you know, unless he's in that main event situation, it's hard for him to build. It's hard to build a match around him because obviously he's not going to really be doing much of the building of the match on the mic or through storyline. And it just feels like the whole character is built on not caring too much. So like, why would he continue to have a Darby Allin-esque feud with someone? Because that's what Darby's whole character is, that he cares and he like doesn't. He'll put his body on the line just to win, and that's something obviously that people like in a baby face. And Orange Cassidy's just too cool for school. I mean, if I were to flip anything, I mean, you might want to flip him and Adam Page right now and have like Orange Cassidy hanging out with Dark Order and like being their buddy, who's cool, and they have like fun adventures together. But yeah, that puts him down at that low tier comedy bit. You can heat him up to be in the main event. But you know, he's never going to be the world champion. I don't know. He may have a run as TNT champion. It's just like, he's a guy that doesn't need a belt. And, he's not the Undertaker, but to me, he seems like AEW's Undertaker, where he's a guy you can build around. That's a weird thing to say, but you know, Undertaker didn't need the belt because he's the Undertaker. And, you know, I think you can build Cassidy to be the guy who has a match you can build to that's kind of different than anything else you're going to see. And I would say that would be the high end if he really put a lot of effort behind his booking, but you know, I think where they're using him is successful enough. And just, you know, like everything in life, there's not enough to go around. And I think they're building a lot of people all over the place. And the fact that there's, you know, one out of your top 10 stars is kind of lackluster on their trajectory is better than 0 out of 10, which would be the opposite. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got two big TV shows coming up this week that we'll keep an eye on, and we'll talk about next week when we preview WWE's Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Let's go back to the phones here. It's the 814 area code, Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us tonight?
Yeah, first question is on the death of the Patriot. You think these independent shows are still going to be running Tom Brandy as the Patriot on their shows out of, could be disrespectful for them to do that now that he's passed away?
Yeah, I know. I don't know a lot about the situation other than, you know, that Tom Brandy has been using the Patriot gimmick on the indies, I guess, against the wishes of Del Wilkes, who was the Patriot. So, the Patriot gimmick is such easy heat, babyface heat, Tyler, that it's if Tom Brandy comes to you with a good deal, I mean, it's kind of hard to pass it up. It's just one of those indie-rific type of gimmicks that works whether you're in front of 15 people, whether you're in front of 1,000, whether you're in, you know, New York City or whether you're in West Virginia, you know, and that's the problem. I mean, it could be pretty easy to come up with a reasonable facsimile of that gimmick, but it's a gimmick that people know, people recognize from a different era in Major League Professional Wrestling. The Patriot wrestled in WCW as well as WWE and elsewhere too. So, you know, you'd like to think, but, you know, we're talking about indie promoters here, Tyler, and there's not a lot of honor among thieves when it comes to those folks.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, I'm not super well versed on the exact situation as well, but, you know, as a whole, unless, you know, if you're a promoter, and, you know, I'm not advocating for this, but unless you're going to be sued by the family for infringement on a trademark or something like that, if you think you're going to get an extra 5 people to buy tickets, I think that's how a lot of these independent situations operate. So, I wouldn't personally do it. I think it's in poor taste, but you know, like I said, sometimes wrestling promoters are not known for their taste there in that aspect.
They're not always scrupulous is a word I'll throw in there. So, Ryan, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
Yeah, second question. I'm sure you've had this happen at your heard about it on the news before with schools, but I heard two wrestling announcers got fired for using the wrong pronouns. I don't know if it was a storyline or real, because the heel cut a promo like on the announcer's doing it, which made it sort of confusing, but somehow it's picked up on the story, so that makes me think maybe it wasn't a storyline. So have you heard anything about this story?
On the independents, you talking?
This was Rise Wrestling out of Pittsburgh. It happened. I'm not sure if it's happened anywhere else too or not.
I don't know if that sounds like it could possibly be a storyline, but maybe not. I think if you're a wrestling announcer in this era, it's incumbent upon you to put over the wrestlers as best as possible, and to also kind of get to know them and help get those personalities across to the audience. And so you need to, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you hear about announcers going to wrestlers and asking what's their finishing move, what's their, you know, what are their key moves, what should I be on the lookout for? And I think that's, you know, the pronouns that you use to introduce wrestlers nowadays, Tyler, I think that's just as important to make sure you get right in a promotion like Rise.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it's all about intent, right? If, you know, for the example, if you're taking either a pronoun for a performer or their finishing move, right? If a performer told you how they would like to be, you know, what their pronouns are, and they told you their finisher, and you gave them the right pronoun, but then you just made up a finisher name for them, I think that's equal territory of you know, disrespect from what the performer wants. And, so I think it's just all about intent. If it's an accident, it's an accident, and you would hope it would be seen as such, but if there's intent behind it to go against the wishes of the name of a finisher, of a move, or their pronouns, I think that's another story. And, you know, each organization is different too. You would hope that there would be, you know, some, yeah, you know, you got to know who you're working for as a wrestling company, what they're looking for. And, you know, ultimately the commentator is a employee. So, you know, there's things that all of us, you know, as employees got to do. So, yeah, I think, but to bring it back, it's all about the intent, if it was purposeful or not, I think is the key for me. But again, I don't know a ton about the situation either. So I hate to talk about it further than what I do or don't know.
And Ryan, your third and final question for us tonight.
Yeah. My question is, with the studio wrestling ending pretty soon, how have these reporters been able to, like, rate the matches, since a large part of that's based on, like, crowd reactions?
I guess everybody's star ratings are different in terms of what they're looking for. You know, most of them are out of 5 stars, sometimes 6 or more. But I think what goes into those ratings, first of all, is different. It may not be written down, but, you know, you may take, okay, crowd, in your own mind, you know, crowd reaction is maybe a certain percentage, smoothness is a certain percentage, finish is a certain percentage. So everybody's percentages are going to be different, so the way people calculate the ratings are all different. That being said, I think it's sort of baked into the ratings, Tyler, that a lot of people like Wade Keller and Dave Meltzer and other people, when they rate the matches in the Thunderdome or at Daly's Place earlier on when there are so fewer fans, is, you know, they may take out that percentage of fan interaction or fan response and then just rate the match itself with a higher percentage than they normally would. Because I don't think you can hold it against anyone that there's no fans. I don't think you could say, well, that would have been a 3-star match if the fans were into it, but since there's no fans, it's a 2-star match. I don't think that's fair to do it that way. So, everybody's star rating is different in terms of how they get to that final product. But I would assume, and I've never done really star ratings in my reports. When I was doing SmackDown on PWTorch.com, I never did star ratings. So I'm just kind of speaking hypothetically as far as if I were to do star ratings, that's kind of how I imagine my mind processing a match and then regurgitating that out into a star rating.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Like you said, it's a case by case. Everyone's different, and that's I think the beauty of a rating system like that. So you can kind of aggregate mm-hmm. people that you trust, and you know, if they're all kind of around the same area, you know that's probably they're probably more accurate than not. But yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I would say is that I don't know if there has been a quote unquote 5-star match, at least in my mind, during this whole era of wrestling without fans. So I think that it does definitely take a part into it, but you can't just automatically, in my mind, you can't just subtract a 0.5-star or a full star because there's no fans and have a legitimate rating system. Because like you said, Greg, there's it's not the talent's fault that there's no one there. So yeah, I think it certainly helps. I think a live crowd tends to make a lesser match a little better than the opposite of that. A good match in front of nobody, I think, can still be rated pretty highly. So, I think that, you know, it helps to give you a barometer, you know, because I know when I'm watching a match, and I'm trying to give my thoughts as respectively as I can to the talent and to the company. You know, if there's a bunch of fans going crazy, that certainly helps me go like, okay, well, I'm not the only one that thinks this is pretty good. So, you know, I think that's the most important thing. But yeah, I don't think there's been a 5-star match during this time. I wish there kind of was, so we could put that against another match in front of live fans that was 5 stars. But I'm sure I'm missing something, so if anyone has anything left, but yeah, that's kind of where I am.
If you've got a 5-star match during the pandemic empty arena era, send it to Tyler. Reach him on Twitter. So, Ryan, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. Want to talk now about the ROH pay-per-view that's slated for next Sunday. It is Best in the World, the card, Jay Lethal versus Brody King, Josh Woods versus Silas Young in a Last Man Standing match, EC3 versus Flip Gordon, Tony Deppen versus Dragon Lee, Roosh versus Bandito for the ROH World title. That Deppen versus Lee matches for the TV title. Jonathan Gresham against Mike Bennett in the Pure Rules match for the ROH Pure Championship. And Shane Taylor Promotions against Dak Draper, Eli Isom, and and Dalton Castle for the ROH World Six-Man Tag Team Championship. So unlike AEW and NXT, I'm not going to go match by match with this, Tyler, but imagine that I'm someone who has not watched a lot of ROH over the last several months. Tell me, what are some key things that I should be on the lookout for, or key people that I need to keep an eye on in this upcoming pay-per-view?
Yeah, so I think people is the key here, because if you looked at this pay-per-view versus a pay-per-view pre-pandemic, I think there's a lot of names that you would not see or you would not see on a pay-per-view. So if you want to go from like the AEW angle, right, you want to talk about young talent, I would look out for Josh Woods, and I would look out for Dak Draper and Eli Isom. Those are guys that, unless you watch ROH weekly, those are people, singles acts that you're not really aware of, I would say. And those guys have all been really increased their clout with me as performers during this time. And then as a group, I would look for Shane Taylor Promotions, which is Shane Taylor, Moses and Khan. Those guys are an up-and-coming. Moses and Khan is an up-and-coming tag team, and Shane Taylor is a singles performer. But those are other people to look out for. And then, you know, just for people that were maybe not as affiliated with ROH or not pushed as strong, obviously Mike Bennett being back, we all know what he's about. But Bandido, as Reverend Keith talked about, you know, was known mainly from the All In show where he main evented that, and then kind of went to ROH and kind of didn't do anything. And you know, he's got a shot at the world title. I think he's the best chance for ROH to get a champion out there in the world that people will follow and watch shows to see. And then beyond that, I would also look out for Tony Deppen, independent darling who has joined ROH here recently, and he's going against Dragon Lee. These two had a match at a previous pay-per-view at Final Battle that was stole the show. So I think that's the match to look out for, is Tony Deppen and Dragon Lee. And then, yeah, all the other names I talked about, they're the, you know, the bedrock, the future of ROH. And the one thing about ROH recently is they've been re-signing people. So in the past, ROH would have somebody, you know, be really good for a year or two and let them walk. And I don't think that's the game plan here for ROH going forward. So if you watch the show or look at a recap or watch a highlight, look out for, you know, like I said, Dak Draper, Eli Isom, Josh Woods, Moses and Khan, Shane Taylor, and Bandido and Tony Deppen. It's a lot of names, but I'm pretty bullish on ROH. And I've been, you know, I've been covering them for the Torch for years now. And I've been really down a majority of the time on this company. And not to, you know, that was not to just be a hater. It was just that the product was not good. And I really think they've come around and had generally pretty smart booking and putting the right people over. And the matches week in and week out have been, you know, ROH TV is usually the second or best wrestling show from a match quality standpoint, week in and week out. And I'm not just saying that because I cover it, but it's been good stuff. So if anyone is interested and watched ROH in the past, I think right now is the perfect time to jump back in, get to know some characters, and you know, be along for the ride.
Yeah, it's a card that really intrigues me, because you know, you look at Rouge versus Bandido, and you just kind of like set the over under at 4.5 stars. I feel like for that one, it's going to be, you know, especially, you know, being in front of fans. I mean, that's going to, that's a game changer. And so really excited to see that. You know, there's some guys I think that you listed very well that I'm kind of interested in seeing. It's been a while since I've seen ROH with any kind of regularity. You know, I try to tune in for their pay-per-views as often as I can, which hasn't been as often lately as I wanted to. You know, so, you know, there's going to be some new guys that I'm going to be getting a look at for the first time when I watch this. And so that's going to be really interesting to me to look at it from that angle, as someone who's kind of jumping back in to ROH with this pay-per-view. And I think that's going to be a lot of people. You know, I think a lot of people, whether it's just, you know, the glut of wrestling on TV has forced people to kind of walk away from following certain promotions, at least weekly or frequently. And then, you know, the buzz this pay-per-view is getting from the Rouge versus Bandido angle, from it being one of the first major shows with a crowd, I think there's going to be more eyeballs like me who are checking it out, or checking back in, I should say, after a while away. So hoping they put their best foot forward with that. All right, Tyler, real pleasure to have you on tonight. Thank you so much for joining me. obviously, you know, you talked about your ROH angle for the Torch. Talk a little bit about what else you do for the Torch and where people can find you on social media.
Yeah, so I have the Daily Cast podcast every Thursday. My co-host Ryan Sullivan and I do the Podcast of Honor, which covers Ring of Honor in depth. So if you watch this pay-per-view like Greg is going to, and you want to, you know, keep up to date, you can listen to us every Thursday on the Daily Cast feed. And then I do the AEW Alternative Report for AEW Dynamite every Wednesday. So if you want to see what I think and what Wade thinks of the show in the written word, you can check me out there. And then I believe I'll be doing the Rampage coverage as well when that starts in August. Not confirmed yet, but so basically come here for I'm here for Ring of Honor and AEW support within the Torch. And, you know, I cover some GCW stuff as well from time to time. And I did not watch the show today yet, but I heard there was a Wade Keller driver, someone did that move as a finisher. So I know Rich Fan and Sean Radican are all over that on Twitter. So I'm glad that Wade finally got a finisher on an independent show. So I think that's my highlight of the day. So I can't wait to see
it's
that.
It's about
yeah. So
damn
AEW,
time, if you ask
yeah,
me.
I know. So I'm very happy about that. But yeah, so you can follow me on the Torch at all those places. And you can follow
awesome.
Me on Twitter and Instagram at Ring of Tyler. So yeah, please do that as well.
All right, before we go, DJ has jumped back in the queue. He's been on and off, so let's get to him before we go. DJ from Miami
hey,
is
guys.
On. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America.
Hey, guys.
You are our
What's
final
going on?
Caller tonight. Make it a good one.
Yay. Because it's today's important. Okay, I got a couple questions. Maybe you can explain this to me, because you guys have been doing this for a long time. I want to talk about baby faces, okay? I'm so confused in EAW. There's three guys who can pretty much go to the moon, but they have no personality. I don't get it. Jungle Boy. Nobody needs to talk for him, okay? He is decent. He has no personality. I have no idea. Look who his dad is. His dad has awesome personality. You think that would rub off on him. But then when you see him in pictures, he's partying, kissing, his girlfriend, all this, like, dude, use that personality. Why be weird? And then going into Darby Allin. Dark, quiet, what? So, and then just like, you know, it's like, and then like Brian Pillman. Brian, same thing. A little too quiet, great. He needs a little more personality. He can definitely go over the moon. I don't get, guys, explain to me, why are they doing this to these baby faces that can really push his company over compared to, like, so quiet and confused?
I will concede that Jungle Boy's personality does not jump off the page yet. He's still very young. We're still very early in the process of him becoming a television character. And, you know, to me, Tyler, if you are presented very early on as a fully formed character, there's nowhere to grow. And I think more so in – I think that's what AEW wants to show. I think they want to see show characters grow. We're seeing that with Adam Page, right? Characters growing over time. In WWE, we don't see that. The Miz is the same character he was 15 years ago. Dolph Ziggler is the same character he was 10 years ago. You know, there's no growth of these characters in WWE. So I will chalk this up to perhaps AEW wanting to show growth with their characters over time. At least for Jungle Boy, who, again, I'll concede, his personality doesn't jump off the screen at you right now. Darby Allin is, I disagree with that. I think his personality is purposely muted in that he's dark, he's brooding, but I think I certainly get who he is as a character. You know, he's a guy who's going to put his body on the line. He can cut promos when necessary, but I think Darby Allin's an odd example to use because he's working. I mean, like, he's a draw, both TV ratings and in person. That's pretty clear. With Brian Pillman Jr., you know, he's part of a tag team. He's part of an undercard tag team. He's not been really given certainly as many opportunities as Darby Allin and Jungle Boy to show off that personality. Perhaps if he breaks away from that tag team, perhaps if that tag team is put on a pedestal and pushed a little harder, Tyler, he may get that opportunity. But what do you think of these examples that DJ has used here as far as their personalities maybe needing a little work and maybe needing to be a little more over the top?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you on a lot of your points, Greg. I think that, I think especially with Darby, that's his character. I think that's, he's going to be kind of the same character, and that's why they paired them together. So he's going to be the guy who doesn't talk very much, and he's going to let his actions within his vignettes and in the ring to tell a story. But, when you have someone like Jungle Boy and with Pillman Jr. and even Adam Page doesn't talk very much. I mean, he's got more of a character through what his nameplate says every week than he does in the ring. And I think a lot of that can be chalked up to, they haven't gone through the WWE system, which for good or for bad gives people that come from the independent scene a long time to do, promo school and get a lot of time on NXT and all that and be able to, read a script. They're all scripted and everything. So there's the pros and cons of a very structured system that is make people appear like stars within their company. And, AEW is a little bit more raw, but they're also, I think Tony Khan and the team Brain Trust know that Jungle Boy is not going to be able to cut a great minute and a half promo in the middle of the ring in front of a live crowd because, A, he hasn't done it very much, and, B, he just hasn't developed that skill yet. So it's a combination of them not having the full faith that they have in someone young like MJF to get on the mic and talk. While developing their character. So I do think it's a portion of letting them be themselves and let themselves get over in whatever way they can best, and also protecting them from being a liability. If a character is a liability somewhere, they're trying to limit that so that we don't talk about it on shows like this.
For sure. DJ, follow up and your second question for us.
Yeah, I just feel like Darby is going to be something. I mean, he's a great wrestler, mm-hmm. but I feel like when you're a heavyweight champion, you need to talk just a little bit, just a little more. And that's it. That's all I want from just a little. So my next thing is the big guys. Oh, boy. I don't want to see Shaq and Big Show, okay? Look, I'd rather see Shaq and Cage any day, okay? I don't want to see this. It's like Taz's group. Taz has all these great guys. But they want to fight each other. Like, and then Starks is hurt. Like, I don't understand. Is it going to be a swerve? What's going on? Like, these guys are big dudes. They need to go after not each other, different people. Like, I don't get what's going on with these big guys. It's just like, it's confusing.
It's a tale as old as time, Tyler, when you have these big guys. Eventually they're going to find their way toward each other and match up. And, Big Show Shaq is a match that's been in the works for years, dating back to WWE, trying to get Shaq in to do WrestleMania, never being able to connect with that with Big Show. And, look, if Big Show is going to return to the ring for AEW, I'd much rather have it against Shaq than have Big Show against just a regular member of the AEW roster. I don't know that would make a lot of sense to me, especially with Paul White's advanced age and condition. I think he's in pretty decent shape, but nevertheless, with his size and things like that, it's not going to be a masterpiece. So why not concede that right off the bat and do a match with Shaq that can garner perhaps some mainstream interest? But what's your take on how AEW has used the big guys?
Yeah, I mean, I would not give it a perfect grade. I'd probably give it like a B-. I think the big guys they have, minus Miro, would you take Miro out of the equation? We're talking about Lance Archer, Powerhouse Hobbs, Brian Cage. I don't know if there's anyone I'm missing off the top of my head, but, those kind of super heavyweight type characters. And I think the way that they've constructed their roster, they want the smaller guys. So, even Kenny Omega is 6 feet tall. Adam Page is 6'1" maybe, and everyone else below Jungle Boy, Darby, they're all smaller guys. And to have that roster of big men who are still credible, and I think all those guys I mentioned still are, but are, losing pretty consistently to those guys to put them over is what you want, unless you want to put one of those guys as your world champion, which I don't think AEW has any intention to do with those three that I mentioned minus Miro. So, you know, I think if that's the purpose and that's what you're trying to do is get your smaller guys that you think have more charisma and more impact as stars over, I think those guys have been used pretty well.
And DJ, your follow-up and third question for us tonight.
Yep. I think Hobbs is going to go somewhere. He has good facials. Mm-hmm. I think that they really pair him up with a good guy. I think he can really go up in this company. I really watch out for him. My last thing is the heels. I don't know. I'm so confused. Now they have mustaches. Now he's doing the Triple H thing. Like, I don't understand. Like, Twinkle Toes really needs to, like, I don't know. He needs to be second, and MJF needs to be first. MJF has it. He has the look. He has the swarminess. He has all these things. He can talk. This guy is not he's not my heavyweight champion. My heavyweight champion is MJF. Like, this guy can be definitely second, a good heel, but he's not MJF. And what they're doing to MJF is just horrible. Like, you understand what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, are they making fun of the company? Like, because these guys work there too. Like, now they have, like, facial hair and they're doing weird things. Like, do you feel like they're disrespecting it? Or do you feel like this is a joke that they're trying to be dicks and this is how they're trying to get over? I don't get it. Like, they don't wrestle a lot. Like, they're not good wrestlers. Like, MJF, like, did you see what he did on the middle rope with that move? That was awesome. Like, I don't get it.
I thought, DJ, you would be a little upset at that move off the second rope not being the pinfall. I thought you would be upset that it was not a...
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to go crazy. I didn't want to say that.
Oh, boy. It's scary that I can almost predict DJ's questions at this point in time. I may need to take a few weeks off. No, but, you know, we talked about this earlier in the show, too, you know, about the Young Bucks, and I guess you can throw Kenny Omega in there as well in terms of, you know, going up to that line of obnoxiousness but not crossing it. And obviously for some people, they're going to cross that line. You know, maybe for DJ they've crossed that line into obnoxiousness. But, you know, I think it's that transformation. You know, it's that from the outfits to how they wrestle to how they look, the Young Bucks have transformed fully now from baby faces to heels. And again, it's that change over time in characters that you don't see often enough in WWE. Dolph Ziggler as a babyface looks exactly like Dolph Ziggler as a heel. The Miz as a babyface looks exactly like The Miz as a heel. And I hate to pick on these two guys over and over again, but they're the prime examples of, you know, WWE's roster just being so stale for the last 10 or 15 years. So, you know, MJF is different than these guys. You know, he's sort of a different style heel maybe a little bit than Omega and the Young Bucks, and I think there's room for more than one style of heels on a roster. But, you know, throwing Omega, Tyler, into that discussion, I mean, you know, Wade has been very pointed in his criticism of Kenny Omega as a character, although I think he's come around a little bit more on him. You know, where do you see Kenny Omega? I mean, is this a championship-worthy championship in a number two promotion in the United States, a championship-worthy character that he's portraying in terms of the mic work and everything associated with it?
Yeah, I think the last, you know, the build with Jungle Boy to the present, especially I think this build with Adam Page is going to be particularly good with all the story, with all the, you know, breadcrumbs that have been laid throughout their time together. So, you know, if you're grading on a curve or grading from start to finish, I don't think this character has been what I would want in a world champion for a major company. It's definitely more of a Impact world champion character, and I think we see that. And when, you know, when he's on Impact, he's leaning even more into that type of character. So I believe the presentation of AEW has gotten slightly better. But, you know, I don't think it's the Kenny Omega character is not the draw. It's the Kenny Omega in-ring performer. And I think that has been, you know, has been pretty fantastic as a world champion to, you know, for AEW. So it's a pro and con of that. And to MJF again, you know, I think we all agree that he is going to be a world champion one day within AEW and probably a multi-time world champion. And when he is, I foresee him to have a long run at the top, and he's going to have a completely different run as a heel than someone like Kenny Omega or Chris Jericho had his heels with the top belt, and I think that shows the diversity of characters at the top, that he's going to be a ruthless, you know, heel that is, you know, scary and diabolical and not funny ha-ha like Kenny Omega's character is. And, yeah, I just think that that is going to be a good – that it's not the same type of character like we see in WWE, right? Like the heel's a heel and the face is a face, and it's kind of the same story.
Yeah.
You know, I would agree that the Omega character is not what I would have written myself, but I think it is getting a little better as we go, and I'm hopeful that this Adam Page feud here is the kind of culmination of his character, and hopefully what we remember as opposed to the – you know, the Matt Sydal matches on TV for the to defend the belt.
All right, DJ. Appreciate the phone call this week. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
If I go, I'll hit you guys up on Sunday if I go.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Talk to you then.
All right, Tyler, we've reached the end. The fireworks are playing us off, I guess. So thank you again for being on the show this week. Always fun to talk wrestling with you, and I'm glad we got you on here to talk a little bit about ROH as well, which is your wheelhouse. So appreciate it, and I look forward to having you on again soon.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. Busy week of television, big shows in pro wrestling coming up this week. So we'll talk about it and more next Sunday here on Wrestling Night in America. Thanks for joining us. Good night.